This is Hockey Central with Jeff Merrick, Anthony Stewart, and Justin Bourne on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
It is the gift that keeps on giving, and that is the Calgary-Edmonton-Cassian-Kachuk drama, which continues. And just as a quick around the table, Anthony Stewart and Justin Bourne, how were your timelines yesterday?
People were unhappy.
Were they sane and respectful?
I'm going to get to this, Jeff, but I need to address the fact that Stewie and I are both out $5 fines for lack of IFBs today.
I got
mine.
Oh,
IFB?
See, I hit it. Gotcha, buddy.
I called myself out.
$5 for you. And you're doing TV tonight, too.
Yeah, I got to learn. Okay, but to your point, my DMs on Twitter.
Yeah, which you keep open.
I do. I was called a homer for Calgary, a homer for the Oilers.
Awesome.
I was called an Oiler hater.
Awesome. Someone called you an idiot, too. I saw that. They insulted your intelligence.
Yeah, that happened.
I was going to jump in there with a gift, but I'm like, I got my own battles to fight on this side.
By the way, that
I
hurts.
Battle
I feel
Mike,
like I was in a scrum in the corner and
I
he didn't
battle,
come in for me.
I got to battle Mike Medano and Daniel Agranu on my Twitter. So.
Get a little more high-profile battles than me and Borny here. You got Hall of Famers coming at you. And
what a league.
Multi-sport Hall of Famers coming at him.
It's fantastic.
What a world.
Lots to get to today. A lot of headlines. We'll get to Backstrom. Crosby returns tonight for the Pittsburgh Penguins. Because I guess they need him. This really
he can help out a bit.
Best team in the NHL since he was injured. Anybody want a hot take that one? No, let's not be dumb here on the program. The Maple Leafs will face off against the New Jersey Devils. 11 games on the go around the NHL this evening. We do have to park some time for Artemi Panarin. I think it comes up in the Fast Five. But if we can jumpstart the Fast Five before we get there with number five, before we get to number one, this guy is remarkable.
Yeah.
Like, who is, we had the conversation, was it with Joe Micheletti? And the question was, when's the last time the Rangers had a player this good in the lineup? Jágr.
Yeah.
Who was Hart Trophy, Surefire Hall of Fame. That's the last time we saw a player of that skill on that rink for that team.
I think there are some people blinded because he had such success with Patrick Kane in Chicago to start his career. And it was one of those, well, anyone could play with Patrick Kane. You know, just another skill guy. Anyone can do that.
Mm.
But, you know, then he went to Columbus and kind of was like, oh, wow, there's a little bit more there. And now it's like, oh, he's his own bona fide star.
And say what you want. I think he's been kind of underrated. He's got 67 points now. He's third in NHL scoring.
And the weird thing, to your point, Stewie, and you know what? You're right. And you know what's weird about that? He plays in New York.
Yeah, those should be heart.
Yeah, who watches Ranger games?
Like that's, you know, I know their team's not doing well, but he should be in the Hart Trophy consideration.
It is becoming one of the most interesting, whether it's him or Shesterkin, to say nothing of Mika Zibanejad, to say nothing of Chris Kreider, whom I still love watching too. Say nothing of Tony D'Angelo, who I think we're all really impressed with. And that was an impressive game last night against the Islanders. The Rangers are a very watchable team. Don't have to be good.
I hate to agree with that, but
they don't
do.
Have to be good. I know your dad was an Islander, won 4 Stanley Cups. I know. But you do have to admit, you know, if you want to find your one shot here and look right to camera and apologize to your father before saying it, Rangers are an interesting team to watch and a fun team to watch.
I'm sorry, Dad. Yes. Yeah, no, it's true. It's true. For all the reasons you mentioned, they are. They're very exciting. You know, they're still... It's an exciting rebuild, which is really rare, right? Like, there, you can see that there is some talent, and they're going to fill it up with talent coming the other, you know, in a few years. So I'm a little concerned that they may be a legitimately good team in a couple of years here.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's get to the Fast Five then. We'll start it off with Cash Money. Nice ATM gift, by the way, Stewie. That was, yes, as you know, quietly to yourself. Yeah, very good. Nicholas Backstrom. It is a 5-year extension with the Washington Capitals worth $46 million. By the way, much like Drew Doughty, did the deal on his own. No percentage goes to the agency.
Yeah, that's a nice bargain if you can figure that out. It's one of those deals where I'm like, that's great. Great. He's been a fantastic player. It's the same cap hit, percentage of cap hit, that his old 10-year deal was with the Capitals.
11.3, according to Cap Friendly.
Right, which he outperformed by miles. So, you know, he's 32 years old, another 5-year deal. If he's not great towards the end of it, I don't think they'd have a problem finding a way to make him disappear. But no, just a wonderful, Wonderful player, a big part of what the Capitals have been, so I like the deal.
I wish I was a good enough player to go up into the GM's office in my gitch and negotiate a $45 billion deal and just be like, nah, I want bonus. $20 million? No, I want more, a little bit more bonus.
Yeah, just the old like light blue and dark blue Stanfields one-piece gitch. Yeah, give me another $10 million.
Do you guys have a thought on that, doing deals? I know it all sounds great because you don't have to pay the fee. You know who doesn't like it? General managers.
Well, because sometimes they have to be honest.
If you have a problem with the player, mm-hmm. you can't go to the buffer. There's no buffer. You have to go right to the player. So if Rob Blake is having a problem with Drew Doughty, he's got to go to Drew Doughty.
Doesn't that seem like he would eliminate problems, though?
No.
What if you have to go to Arb?
If it's like, okay, we got a problem with this guy here, you go to the agent, he fluffs up the language and gives it a softer landing as he presents it to the player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, my heart of hearts, I feel like being honest with the player would do more good, but I understand that that can cause problems. Sometimes players have egos and don't want to hear things that are honest.
Players are sensitive.
They can be.
Okay.
GM calls into the office. Yeah, we got a problem. Tell it to my agent. You are the agent. Yeah.
Well, then carry on, I guess.
So if you look at his draft, okay, that was the Vancouver draft 2006, and that's Eric Johnson, Jordan Staal, Jonathan Toews in that draft. Claude Giroux in that draft, Phil Kessel in that draft.
Jordan Staal.
Out of everybody in that draft, Nick Backstrom, the highest scorer, 908 points. Whenever I hear the name Nick Backstrom, I always think of the Selke Trophy and how this guy never won one.
Do you?
Don't you?
I think of Ovi's assist man. That's, you know, the guy that really facilitated the best goal scorer of my generation anyway. Mm-hmm. But is he? I just never have thought of him as a great defensive player.
Totally overshadowed. Yeah. Totally overshadowed in Washington, but a wonderful two-way. It's like one of the more complete players that game, and has outscored his entire draft class.
Do you know who had the most penalty minutes from the first rounders that year?
No, who?
Chris Stewart.
How do you know that?
I'm looking it up right now.
All right, very good. We move on. It's bad news for the Toronto Maple Leafs, and the repercussions will be felt and seen tonight on the ice as they face off against the New Jersey Devils. Morgan Rielly, 8 weeks, fractured foot. This is the shot block against the Panthers on Sunday.
Yes, arguably their top defenseman right now. Another deep blow to the Toronto Maple Leafs decor now with Jake Muzzin out. Blocked a shot against on Sunday against the Florida Panthers. Now they have to call up Sandin to fill the void. So the decor right now, it's looking a little thin.
Let's just read it out, shall we? Yeah. Dermott with Hall, Marinchin with Barry, Sandin with CeCe.
So we talked about them having to outscore their problems before, so they're really going to have to outscore it. So it's going to be interesting to see now with their cap implications. Are they going to be able to make a deal to possibly bring in some short-term help? But, you know, they're going to have to outscore a lot of problems on the back end because they haven't really been paying attention to the details on defense as of late. And with Morgan Rielly out, it's going to be a really tough task to, you know, defend these other top teams.
One of two things I see happening here. One, either the Toronto Maple Leafs try to do what you're talking about, Stewie, and that is try to outscore the team. You score five, we got to score six. Or this forces the forwards to play defense.
Yeah.
Could this be a blessing in disguise for those forwards?
I think it could be a blessing in disguise in that you're going to learn a lot about your other defensemen. I think the forwards could, you know, make a conscious effort to be better defensively for a while, but I don't think you can change a player's stripes, so to speak. Like, I think these guys kind of are who they are, as much as they may focus on that for a little while. I don't know if it's a long-term good thing, but it might be just to get them to play defense for a little while, but mostly to see what the other D can do.
And Justin and I were talking about this off-air now. This is an opportunity now for Travis Dermott to now earn some major minutes and start playing, yep, you know, a little bit better. So he's going to have more responsibility. Hopefully he, you know, turns it around.
Zach Cassian. Okay, get ready to light your timelines on fire here.
This one would fall to me.
Here we go. Zach Cassian, 2-game suspension. That, in a lot of ways, is a gift to hockey fans. Because, one, there was a suspension, so Edmonton is enraged. A good thing. Mm-hmm. Cheer for chaos, folks. Cheer for chaos. And, two, it's 2-3, so he's available, first game back, to play against the Calgary Flames.
It's great. Isn't that fantastic? I cannot wait to watch that hockey game. And then they play them another few days after that. So awesome. Here's my hot take on the 2-game suspension is, yeah, sounds about right. I mean, I talked to some of the NHL offices, and the general thought there was, you can't do that. you cannot pummel a guy who is not fighting back. I mean, I understand the justification for Cassian. I understand why he's mad. I understand people are upset about the Tkachuk hits and how they happen. There's tons of debate to be had here. At the end of the day, boil it down to this. You cannot rain blows from the heaven on another person's face who's not fighting back.
Yeah.
Two games.
This whole thing, like everything from the hits to the reaction to the suspension, I look at all of it and I say, I understand everything. There isn't one part of all of this or the reaction from either side that I look at and say, well, that's a surprise.
Right.
I can understand where Oilers fans don't like those hits. I can look where Calgary Flames fans will say, those hits, albeit aggressive, were fine.
Legal hits.
The reaction, legal. I can understand. We all have egos. You get roasted like that a couple of times, you're only thinking about yourself and your ego. And that's the reaction.
One thing surprised me a little bit. The support that Cassian had from his teammates, James Neal and Leon Draisaitl. Draisaitl said if he was on the ice with Tkachuk in a 3-on-3 game in the All-Star game, he'd get off the ice.
I'd throw him a suicide pass.
Your own teammate?
No one's
lit up in the All-Star game.
Mark Mathot hammered me in Owen Sound one time in the All-Star game. I said, I'll fight you right now. I don't care if it's an All-Star game.
Those games in the OHL are different. This is an All-Star game in the NHL.
But I was surprised by the support.
And the suspension I look at and I say none of it is surprising at all. If it was only one game, I would have looked at it and said, okay, that's fine. That's Matt Carkner on Brian Boyle.
Yeah.
That's cool too.
Like if Cassian catches Tkachuk a couple times and he's hurt, how many games is it? 10? Like it's a lot more. You can't do that at the end of the day.
More on this as the show progresses, as the week progresses, as we lead up to the 29th of this month, which is the next time these two teams meet, because the war of words will probably not simmer down. Meanwhile, good news for the Montreal Canadiens and great news for Carey Price. 31 saves, shutout. Habs defeat the Flames 2-0.
Yep, I'm going to stay as positive as possible when talking about Montreal. They need some positive energy after breaking that 8-game winless streak here and winning two in a row. So 31 saves, as you mentioned. He made 15 in the third period, second shutout of the season in his 46th of his career.
That ties him with Ken Dryden third all-time,
yeah,
right?
Two goals against in the last two games. But I thought I'd mention Kovalchuk had 21 minutes last night.
Mention that?
A daily reminder that Kovalchuk's doing well in Montreal.
Yeah. You know what I can't understand? Watching this game, we've seen it before. I asked George Parros about it at the draft last year on the 31 Thoughts podcast. And I said, well, yeah, I can maybe see where you're coming from, which is a polite way of saying get lost. Mm-hmm. I don't want to entertain your dumb ideas, Merrick, which I get a lot. Don't worry, folks. Mark Giordano with the spear on Ryan Poehling last night, which is not a spear. I like using the phrase cowbell.
Pitchfork?
Because that's right from underneath to under the cup. Cowbells him.
Sure.
It never gets anything other than a snicker.
Yeah.
When you see that, when you see someone get that, it's just a giggle, like we're all 12.
Yeah.
And the guy writhes around on the ice in pain.
Yeah.
Do we all have a thought about the cowbell?
Don't do
in
it.
In the NHL.
It hurts.
It does.
I'm bringing up memories right now.
But it's so true. Like, you very rarely hear of any, like, real injury from it, but it's awful. I understand hurt. It's awful. It's just like, why are we doing this to each other? We all understand.
Did you see the Cale Fleury hit on Lucic last night? I thought he was going to get up, and but I think he was hurt after
Cassian on him?
Is that going to be the new
adjective? Isn't that what you're supposed to do after you get hit?
Went full Cassian.
You go full Cassian.
His helmet
someone?
Almost flew off, so I guess.
I thought Calgary struggled to meet the emotional level after. I think they were still dealing with the Edmonton aftermath from the day before, probably talking about it, reading about it.
Yeah.
They just didn't seem to come to life at any point in that game.
We talked to Eric Engels last week about the Montreal Canadiens and about Cale Fleury specifically. I love that there is that shark in the water now.
Yeah, I had to look him up.
That there's another guy that hits.
Yeah, I thought, I'm like, he hammered him pretty. I'm thinking he's 6'5", 245, the way that he ran him over. He's only 6'1", 205, so he plays heavy, really heavy. Yeah.
He does. And the thing about it is, too, guys don't play that way anymore. Like, part of the, again, we'll take it back to Tkachuk and Cassian. Part of the reason why that got so much traction is nobody hits anymore. Like, once upon a time, those hits were pretty regular. Pretty routine. Heads up, you're below the red line. Guys are going to come when you're coming out from around the net. It's going to happen. The majority of it is Colby Armstrong waiting in the weeds for you to make that turn. But still, like, these things happen. Now they don't, which is why it's that much more pronounced. Much in the same way, Tom Wilson's behavior gets more headlines than it ever would have, because 10 years ago, everybody had a Tom Wilson. 5 years ago, most teams had a Tom Wilson. Now, there's only a couple of guys, so it stands out. And I think that's where a player like Kelfler, and you saw it with Lucic, where some defenseman might be like, yeah, I'm not so sure about this. Kel Fleury's like, screw it, I'm going to fill my boots on this one. Great hit by Kel Fleury.
I just had a quick idea here. Do you think that Tom Wilson gets a little bit more respect than Tkachuk around the league and, you know, with guys headlining because he answers the bell right away?
Yep.
Is that part of it?
100%.
Yeah. Okay, I just thought I'd mention that.
Yeah, for sure. But also, you know, Tom Wilson is a big, like, he's a heavy.
Yeah.
You know, Tkachuk is not necessarily, so I understand his hesitancy, but then it's like, okay, well, don't chase guys around if you're not. I understand your point.
Okay, we'll finish up where we kind of started. The Breadman, 5 points, 2+3. Artemi Panarin leads the way as the Rangers hand it to the Islanders last night.
No, I don't
Borny,
remember.
Borny, what happened?
Let's just talk.
Did you watch that one?
Let's talk more Panarin.
Ross Johnson and Michael Haley.
I played with Michael Haley
Smith
in Utah.
And Martin last
night. Bridgeport. Yeah, a couple of good fights.
You played with Haley?
I did, yeah. He is super talented, actually. You know, on top of being super tough, he has really nice hands. He wouldn't be in the NHL if he couldn't play. He can play, but he's not afraid of it.
I always say the same thing. That guy that you watch on television that you say is no good is amazing.
Haley would own your beer league team.
You
own them.
Have to be so
owns
good.
Your beer league team.
So good just to be bad in the NHL.
Yes, that is very true. Three active players have five-point games with two separate teams right now. In the NHL. Artemi Panarin is one. He did it with Columbus and the Rangers. The other two are Joe Thornton.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And Eric Staal.
Minnesota, of course. Yeah.
There you go. So that's my little factoid for the day. I hope you had fun.
No, that was
See
good.
See you tomorrow, folks.
Yeah.
That was good. Okay, so that's a cozy 17 minutes. So what do you guys want to do for the other hour and 45 here? Yes, there is indeed more. Maple Leafs and New Jersey Devils tonight, so much focused on the injuries around Toronto. Yet the New Jersey Devils are coming off an amazing weekend where they beat the Washington Capitals and the Tampa Bay Lightning in succession. What do you, and it's very seldom, if ever, you see the effects of a general manager change felt, seen, anything on the ice. But this feels like a new Jersey Devil squad now. And nothing has changed on the ice. Nothing has changed. But doesn't it feel like everything now has changed for the New Jersey Devils? And maybe I'm just looking at this because they won those two games and less about Ray Shearer getting fired and Tom Fitzgerald in as the interim. But doesn't New Jersey feel different
to you guys right now? It feels like someone threw, you know, like they were spinning their wheels on the snow and someone threw some kitty litter in there. Like maybe they can get some traction in some direction, whether they decide to be worse and sell off assets or whether they decide that they want to go in with some of the guys that they have. Before, it felt like it was going nowhere. You know, even their head coaching situation, they have Alan Nazardine in there, Elaine Nazardine, who's...
It's been really good, man.
Yeah, it's gone well.
It's been really good.
It's gone well, but it just hasn't felt like he's going to be the guy. Like,
why not?
Well, you're right. There's no reason he can't be, but because there's so many good or big-name coaches without jobs right now. It's felt like someone is going to eventually have that job. So it's all felt very temporary and cardboard to me in New Jersey. And hopefully this is the start of something more permanent.
I think with, you know, at this point of the season, the pressure's off. You know, they're most likely not making the playoffs. They're pretty far out of it. So now I think they're just playing for pride. And when you go out there and you don't have that daily stress, oh, we need to win this game, they play a little bit more relaxed. And when you play a little bit more relaxed, you get better results. But let's not forget, they got some good players. These players are fairly talented NHL hockey players, right? So maybe it just takes a new voice to come in, a new system, a new, you know, guys just stepping up at the right time. So it's a pretty good hockey team on paper, and eventually it's going to turn around. So my question is it too late for them to turn the season around? Mm-hmm. I think
Here's my question about New Jersey. What qualifies now as success? Because in any situation, even when you're out, you can still have a successful second half of the season, but the definition of success is different from one team to another. Sometimes it's, well, are the kids, like for the longest time, we looked at the Edmonton Oilers and said, don't worry about the record. No, don't worry about the wins and the losses. At the end of the season, if the kids got better, it was successful. What, as of right now, maybe even back up to the Washington game, or even before that, the coaching change, all right, Hines out, Nazardine in, interim albeit. What would qualify as a successful remainder of the season for the New Jersey Devils? Is it wins? Is it Heisher and Hughes taking the next step? Is it what is success now for the New Jersey Devils? Because there is enough runway to have some type of success. To your point, Stewie, it doesn't have to be make the playoff success, but you can still have a successful season despite losing. So what's success for New Jersey at this point?
I think it's probably just setting themselves up for the next couple of years, having a team identity. Are you going to be a speed team? Are you going to be a tough team? Are you going to have Sammy Vatanen and PK Subban around? So sort of just setting themselves up and creating that team identity going forward. But for me, it's all about the kids. So I want to see Heisher and Hughes be in that 20-25 goal range and now taking that next step in their development. These guys are going to be stars in the NHL. So, for them, you don't want them to look back at this and say, you know, how much better would these guys have done in St. Louis or Edmonton? You know, you want them to be the faces of this franchise. So I think if they take the next step of these two being the face of the franchise, that's how you quantify success.
Yeah. Agree? Yeah, no, I do agree. Heisher and Hughes are it. Like, if the rebuild's not going to work, if those guys don't become guys, like, if they're not stars in this league, you can't win without top-end guys. So their development is important, and I think for that, you can't be a joke of a team. You need to win. You need to be competitive. And part of what we saw here in Toronto is when you have a lot of new players and new ideas, it doesn't always gel for a while. You can't really quite make out what the team is or where they're going. And I see that in New Jersey with Subban comes in from here and Gusev comes in from over there and Simmons comes in from there, just all this and young players. I want to see, is that a team that can find, as you said, not just an identity, but gel and some chemistry and look like a unit and a team. And hopefully that puts Heisher and Hughes in position to take the steps necessary that they can get to where they're going in 2 years from now.
And then the follow-up becomes, if that happens, is it Alain Nezradin's job?
Sure. That's a great follow-up, and I think it probably should be, right? Like, he's the chef that's making the cake.
Unless you just
there.
Want a showbiz move. Yeah. Like, hey, we're bringing in Mike Babcock because it's a big, sexy name. We want to try to sell some tickets here. I don't know how many times coaches sell tickets, but
I think so. I mean,
does it become if that happens
in any other year? But there's too many quote unquote safe picks and coaches that can turn things around. I allude back to Pete DeBoer, where I think a lot of his teams have overachieved, from where they started to where they finished. So, could you see him coming back to New Jersey?
Right now, I'm still Camp Nezradin.
Yeah.
But I don't think that Pete DeBoer is going to be out of the NHL long.
Mm-hmm. I mean, New Jersey 6-2-2 in their last 10 games. That's a nice run. They're beating some good teams.
They beat Washington and Tampa this weekend.
It's a pretty good week.
Let the gravity of that sink in. Yeah. As you do that, we pause. We step away. Ken Sabourin will join us. Washington Capitals radio analyst. We'll talk about the Caps. And we'll talk about the Nick Backstrom deal and what that means for the Washington Capitals. And also, what does that mean for Alexander Ovechkin? It's always been speculated that Backstrom and Ovechkin plan to end their careers together. True? We'll ask Ken Sabourin that next. As Hockey Central continues on Sportsnet 590, the Fan simulcast on Sportsnet and the NHL Network.
Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590, the Fan.
Welcome back to the program here Monday to Friday, noon to 2 Eastern. Jeff Merrick alongside Anthony Stewart and Justin Bourne. Still to come in hour two, Mike Rupp, NHL Network analyst. We'll get on the New York Rangers Artemi Panarin page. Let's go around the league with Rupper a little bit later on in the program. Meantime, as we welcome aboard Ken Sabourin, Washington Capitals radio analyst, we remind you all that Nicholas Backstrom of the Caps has signed a 5-year contract extension worth $46 million, former NHLer and now radio analyst for the Caps. Ken Sabourin joins us now. We were talking, Ken, and first of all, welcome to the program. We were talking before you came on at how unique it is that the player did his own contract, agent-free, shades of Drew Doughty. Your thoughts on players acting as their own agents to kick off this conversation?
Well, you look at it, I think it's great. Obviously, great for Nick, and, keeps more money in his pocket. That's one thing. But, I think back, look, 15, 20 years ago, there was a lot of bonuses, a lot of different things you have to negotiate in there. You weren't kind of just put into a category, okay, you score 70 points, you make X. You score 20 goals, you make X. So I think, you're probably going to see more of it in the future for guys like him, near the end of his career, signing his last deal probably. Mm-hmm. why not? I mean, you know what you're worth. I mean, you do a little homework. It doesn't take a lot to figure out, you know, where you fall. So I think it's great for Nicklaus, and, you know, obviously he could handle it emotionally, keep playing through it. Who knows how long he's been talking to him about it, but he's done a great job, put it behind him, and now he gets his contract, and probably his last one.
Ken, it feels like a very fair dollar amount, but it's also not a small number. And just looking at the cap situation there in Washington, do you think that this spells not disaster, but a bad news for Braden Holtby?
Well, I think that's the speculation out there. I mean, how are they going to get everybody under the cap now? And then you got Ovechkin coming in next year. What's he going to demand? Is he going to do a four-year deal and go out with Nicklaus Backstrom at the same time? So it's going to be interesting to see. I think it's going to be tough to get Braden under the cap. I'm sure they'd want to keep him. But then you got Samsonov, who's been a very outstanding, he's had an outstanding year so far. He's been very calming back there, and he's a great goaltender, and there's no doubt he's the future. It's just how long is it going to be? So I think it's going to be tough to get Braden in. I don't think it's impossible. Nothing's impossible in this game. I mean, you never know what they're going to do, but if I'm a betting man, I think it's going to be real tough for Braden to come back for years to come.
So if they decided to get Holtby and Ovechkin done, who's that going to be at the expense of? Are there any other players that you can see not being on this roster if they decide to go that route and sign the two of them?
Well, you're lucky you signed the two of them. I mean, you have then you have Nicklaus, obviously Backstrom signed. You have Kuznetsov. He's got a lot of years left. TJ Oshie has a lot of years left. So, I mean, there's got to be one of those guys has to go. I mean, there's just not enough room. You have an Orlov back there. See how that goes out. I mean, you have a couple guys, but how many guys do you have to move to make room for that? That's the key. I mean, it's not like, okay, you can move one guy. Maybe you got to move two good pieces of the puzzle, and do they want to do that? So I just don't see it all happen. I don't see how they're going to do it, but I'm not a capologist. I don't know how it all works back in the background, but it's going to be tough to fit all these guys that they want to keep in here that they've had for the core for, you know, so many years. So, and if they do find a way to get them done, I would imagine there's going to be a couple casualties and big names too.
Ken Sabourin joins us, Washington Capitals radio analyst. You mentioned Alex Ovechkin a couple of seconds ago, and that was part of the conversation around Nicklaus Backstrom, as you referenced, is this idea that Ovechkin and Backstrom could end their careers together. Now, back in the Vancouver draft in 2006, there's George McPhee on stage, and it's Alex Ovechkin making the pick, welcoming Nick Backstrom in. Where does this idea come from? What are the origins of Backstrom and Ovechkin wanting to go out together?
Well, I think, you know, everybody's speculating, all of us media, you want to call it speculating, that what a great way, you know, you come in pretty much together and you ride off in the sunset. You both have, to me, Hall of Fame careers. If Backstrom keeps it going the way it is, he's going to be a lock to get in there too. And why not do that way? I mean, it's, we'll see. I mean, I think it could happen. These guys are pretty close. They've been together. They've been through the wars together. They finally won. And they consistently, I mean, they break them up once in a while. And they put a different centerman in there, you know, with Ovechkin, but they always go back to 19-8. I mean, these guys have been a dynamic duel for years, and I don't see it changing. It's going to be, I think it'll be a storybook ending if they can do that. If they want to do that, I'm sure if they want to, they'll do it. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I think Ovechkin will get whatever he wants when his negotiating time comes up next year. And we'll all find out if it's a four-year deal, you know what the plan is.
Well, and I'll ask this question on behalf of David Amber then as a follow-up. David has always banged the drum about, you know, Ovechkin being able to catch Gretzky. That would only give Ovechkin 4 years after this one to catch Wayne Gretzky.
Yeah, it's going to be, you know, I think it's all going to come down to, okay, he's got next this year, obviously on pace. He's having another great year scoring.
Oh, sorry, 5 years. Five years.
Yeah, that would give him 5 years. And then, you know, if next year he continues to go, there's no, you know, I mean, he signed a four-year deal. Let's just say he's got 5 years left. There's no saying he can't sign another 1 or 2 year deal if he's still putting the pucks in the back of the net too. So I would think that's in the back of his mind. I mean, if he's close at the end of that 4 years or 5 years, whatever he signs, I think he does come back and go for it. But if things slow down or whatever, that's going to be tough. If he thinks it's out of reach, you know, who knows what he's going to do. But there's no saying they can't bring him back for a year or two and just be a power play specialist when he gets up in age.
The Washington Capitals and their style of play. I look at other great teams in the Eastern Conference, and I'm thinking of teams like Carolina and Toronto, who are not physical at all and just pure skill teams and don't believe in grit. And then I look at Washington with guys like Wilson and Gudas and Oshie and Hathaway, and even Ovechkin can be physical. How important do you think that element is to the Capitals' success in getting through playoffs?
Well, I think that's the key. I mean, when they're not playing their game, which is a heavy game, they call it, they're just not a, you know, they're just an average team. I mean, they got a ton of skill. They can still beat you on any given night. But when they're playing their heavy game, when they're not just the Wilson, you know, Ovechkin's involved, like you said, Hathaway's been a great pickup for the Washington Capitals. I mean, he sticks his nose in there every shift, every game. You know what you're going to get. That fourth line's been outstanding in terms of energy. But when they play that heavy game, there's not too many teams that can stick with them. And, you know, you look at the last couple of years, who's won the Stanley Cup. I mean, it's a heavy game. You can do that all you want during the regular season, but I still believe it holds true in the playoffs where things are grinding it out and, you know, you're playing teams six, seven times, the heavy game will come out on top. So I think as long as they continue to do that, they played that last night. They've been off their game, you want to call it, the last couple of weeks, not 100%, but they played a great game last night, and it shows. They get a 2-0 win. So when they play that game, good luck to teams that don't want to play it.
You just described Washington, you know, checking all those boxes in skill, heaviness, depth, and goaltending. What moves, if anything, do you see them making at the deadline, trade deadline?
Well, I think probably three-quarters of the teams out there in the league, I think they're looking for a top four defenseman to get in there to solidify the defense core. I think goaltending, they're fine. Obviously, you know, a great tandem with you know, one of the best goalies in the world and one coming up in age, young guys. So they're good there. They got a ton of, you know, talent on the forward line. They're really deep there. They can move guys up and down the lineup. I think that's what the wish list would be, like a top four defenseman. How are you going to get that? That's up to the GM to figure that one out. But I think there's no secret there. I mean, probably, like I said, three-quarters of teams in the league probably looking for a top four D, but I think if they get one, that would solidify them for another big run in the playoffs.
20 goals, 18 assists. Ken Sarbin, when I say the name Jacob Varana, what goes through your mind?
I think he's an outstanding player. I mean, this guy here is just breaking the ice. He's been very good. He's a young goal scorer, and as we know, they go through their streaks, but he's got a release like nobody. He can skate like the wind. He's got great vision, good hockey sense. And he's playing with more confidence. And he was moved up on the power play a couple games ago. So he took over Kuznetsov's spot when the power play was faltering. And they've gotten a couple goals. So, you know, he's going to get more confidence that way. You look at all the goals he has. He's had one power play goal all year. So 5-on-5, they always say it's tough to score in this league. Well, he seemed to figure it out. So he's getting rewarded now on the power play. I think the sky's the limit for this guy. I think it's just a matter of, you know, putting it all together again, maybe another year, and then his power play, his confidence on there. Once he starts potting a few goals there, then he'll be up in that, you know, 40-goal range. And, you know, that's tough to be in this league. But I like him. He's got all the tools, and he's a great kid too.
I'm always fascinated by how certain pros evolve to better fit in the NHL. And I was on the Toronto Marlies coaching staff when Brendan Leipsic was there, and he was a skilled player and a guy you thought could produce offense and, you know, was close to being a Toronto Maple Leaf. And he's had to alter his game at his size to play in the NHL, and he's been a part of a very effective fourth line there in Washington. Can you tell us a little bit about what he's been like this season and his style of play?
Well, I think, you know, that fourth line, I mean, for years they used to always say the Islanders' fourth line was the best fourth line in hockey. But I put these guys up against anybody right now in terms of going on the ice. And Leipzig brings that speed, tenacity. I mean, he doesn't mind sticking his nose in there, you know, going in the corner, hitting. That's what they do. Hathaway, him, Dowd, they play a great game, and they have a good chemistry together. I mean, they read off each other. And, you know, I say it all the time on the air, you know, the fourth line's out there for energy. And they haven't been scored on 5-on-5, and it's almost like 13 games or something like that. So, and the reason why is they play in the offensive zone most of the time. So, fourth line to do that, that's a bonus for your club. And they contribute. So, Leipzig brings that speed. He's got good puck handling. He's on the second unit of the power play. So, you know, he gets out there to mop up a little bit here and there. I think it's a matter of time. He's missed a couple great opportunities the last few games. It's just hard luck pucks going in. But I think he'll start to score a few more goals as the year goes on. But I think it was a great fit. I think it was a great move bringing in those two guys, him and Hathaway, to solidify that fourth line. You know, they're deep down the middle now.
Ken Sabourin joins us. Ken, I want to finish up the conversation about the Washington Capitals with a couple of thoughts on the head coach, Todd Reirden. I know that everyone is, and perhaps rightfully so, when you consider the injuries and the performance despite them, giving the Jack Adams Trophy to Mike Sullivan. But, you know, I keep coming back to Todd Reirden and the job that he's done from one season to the next. And where last year Reirden may have been criticized on, you know, style of play with this team, player selection by way of, you know, composition of lines and pairs on the back end. They are a different team. How much did, in your estimation, Todd Reirden adjust to make this team successful this season?
Well, I think, you know, like every player, they evolve in their career, and I think he has too, and I think he realizes the team he has. I mean, you got to coach what you have, and I think he's done a really good job keeping everything together. You know, you have a lot of talent on that one team. It takes a while. There's only one puck out there, and he's able to keep everybody, you know, to the point where this is what we're doing. This is the power play. This is the ice time you're getting. Guys are slotting in where they're slotting in, and they're willing to do it. So, to me, you know, you look at all the X's and O's, that's great, but a coach has to be able to handle that room, and I think he's got a handle on the room. And he's got good leadership, which, you know, he puts into place, and they do a nice job. So the X's and O's, obviously, the power play is one thing they're concerned about right now. I mean, they'll work that out. There's too much talent there not to work it out. Mm-hmm. But I think he's done a great job. You know, from last year, I think they learned, obviously, you know, with going out in the first round was a huge disappointment. They had a little taste in their mouth to get back at it. So I think he's, you know, he's to manage the bench and manage these egos or whatever you want to call it, each player. He's done a pretty good job up to this point. I don't see it changing.
Solid team. And again, the news of the day, Nicklas Backstrom signing a 5-year contract extension. It is 9.2 as the AAV, $46 million total. And that goes, minus escrow, right into the player's jeans because he did it all without an agent. Ken, thanks so much for stopping by today and sharing your expertise.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Ken Sabourin, Washington Capitals radio analyst. One of the players, too, when you look at the Caps, and you guys both know this, having both played pro hockey, every team needs not so much a glue guy, but a Swiss Army knife type player, a versatile player, a guy that can go up and down your lineup and do a lot of different things. Normally, that guy is a center, and it's very rare that you have a Stanley Cup winning team when you don't have, like, a look at Berkey's Anaheim team, and that was Sammy Paulson. You look last year with the St. Louis Blues, and you can make the case that was Tyler Bozak. You look at the Penguins and maybe say, yeah, you know what, that was Nick Bonino. And for the Washington Capitals, I know I keep coming back to him, Lars Eller is so valuable to that team. I know he's best slotted as a third-line center, but he can play up and down your lineup with ease. And anyone that's played with him will always say the same thing. It's an easy game when he's your center.
Yeah, that makes a world of difference as a winger, particularly just being physical. I look at the Toronto Maple Leafs here, and you have like Alex Kerfoot, who's a wonderful player, third-line center, can play up and down your lineup in different positions. Not quite the same when you're a skilly, passy guy as when you're playing with a guy who's you know, a little bit more straight lines and bigger like Eller.
He scored some big goals playing for Montreal.
Oh,
so
yeah,
it's,
man.
Like, why isn't he still there?
Yeah. Well, I remember when they were trying to break in Alex. I remember Montreal was trying, and again, it was false started a ton, but trying to see if Alex Galchenyuk was going to be a center.
Yep.
And they would always play him with Lars Eller. Like, Lars Eller would always be on the wing. And then important draws, Lars Eller would slide in. Like, yeah. We're kind of committed to trying this, but when it really comes to crunch time, we're going to go with the shorter thing, and that's Lars Eller. He continues to pay off for the Washington Capitals. We'll step away and come back and talk about, try to, when you hear the name, just don't snicker. Brad Marchand. What are you laughing at? Tell you why they're laughing in a couple of moments. We all saw it last night. No one had a bigger snicker probably than Keith Jones on the Philadelphia broadcast. And the penalty shot that was not, or the shootout rather, that was not, and it cost the Boston Bruins a chance of beating the Philadelphia Flyers. We'll talk about 63 on the Bs when Hockey Central returns. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, simulcast on Sportsnet and the NHL Network.
More Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
How you guys feel about shootout?
I think that they're fantastic. They're not as good as 3-on-3 overtime, but they're fantastic.
In KHL, they considered me a specialist.
Did you go every time?
Yeah, because they saw me on video scoring 2 goals in the AHL just randomly. So they're like, yeah, this guy knows what he's doing. In Russia, they just look at stats. That's how they recruit. They look at stats and, oh, yeah, this guy looks like he's
good. Just go to elite prospects. Yeah. Like, oh, okay, yeah, should work out.
Yeah, so I was a shootout specialist in Russia.
I was a regular when I played. I was always in the three-man rotation.
What was your money move?
I can't shoot the puck, so I deke.
I was the five-hole specialist. I can go five-hole on any goalie in the world.
So would you drag a goalie across it and tuck it and slip it through the legs?
Fake the slap shot, go forehand, backhand, five-hole every time.
I think going like five-hole on a breakaway, like a deke five-hole, is the most like, if it goes wrong, it looks terrible.
Did
it looks
like you weren't even close. Did you see Pastrnak's goal last night? That was my go-to move. Come across the
goal number 36?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a backhand.
Nice, yeah, no, that's good.
A little squeaker.
He's a nice player. Brad Marchand with a tough time yesterday.
I loved it. I will say, he's getting like really, really made fun of here. And it's like, you can see how it happens.
It's Brad Marchand.
That's like, why. I'm sure you've done something like this, too. You just don't skate one.
Not that bad.
No.
Doth protest too much. Let's hear the Philadelphia. The Boston call of this. With Jack Edwards and Andy Brickley is rather muted. I don't think that Jack Edwards really knew what to say, nor would I
really?
If that happened and he just skated by.
He ran out of words?
Philadelphia was only too happy to see this happen to public enemy number one and Brad Marchand. Let's hear the call from last night, Philadelphia style.
Brad Marchand must score to keep the game going. Marchand overskates the puck. He touched it, though, with his stick. What's the ruling? The officials get together.
He moved it forward.
If he touched the puck with his stick, that's going to count.
He did move it forward.
What an ending this
it's
would
over.
Be. Flyers are off the bench, but there's been no call made yet. No goal! It's over! Marchand flubs it! And the Flyers win in the shootout. 6-5 is your final. I'm not sure these fans can have any sweeter an ending than that.
Can we just isolate Keith Jones going, ha? I don't know how quickly we can put that edit together, but that is a very Keith Jones-esque, ha. As if, that's right, take that 63. As an ex-player, I know, okay, I get that it's Brad Marchand. However you feel about Brad Marchand is however you feel about Brad Marchand. Is there a part of you that's like, oh, guy? Or are you just Keith Jones?
No, because he's such an elite player. Like, people forget, like, during the game, he came in and toe-dragged, and people saw the two-on-one pass coming through, and he still made the pass. So he's an elite player.
Oh,
so
yeah.
They're waiting for an opportunity to jump on him. But, again, it's a one-off. I'll chalk it up to a one-off.
I would rather do what Marchand did than remember when Steven Stamkos overskated the puck on a shootout shot and then went back to get it and fell, and the whole thing kind of died.
Is that the new was it James Winooski who fell off his stick or –
Dennis Weidman
was the biggie because he went for a kind of sailed. Weidman was the one.
Yeah. it was like, how is there so much force generated in that?
Guys, watch this. A new move. That Forsberg thing you've been watching? Yeah, I got the pole vault here, boys.
Watch this one.
You watch this one. Tough one last night for Brad Marchand and the Boston Bruins. There he goes, Keith Jones. The Flyers have beaten Boston 4 times this year. First time ever?
I think the Flyers are better than they've been, and I think they're still a force to be reckoned with yet.
Just win on the road, guys.
Win
on the road. Hour 2, Hockey Central on the horizon. Don't go anywhere.
This is Hockey Central with Jeff Merrick, Anthony Stewart, and Justin Bourne on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Brad Marchand, how'd he get up there?
Brad Marchand, 6 minutes ago, tweeted a picture of him holding a Stanley Cup.
Yeah. No, he wins.
Like,
got it.
Yep. Is that the ultimate trump card? Is that the ultimate Wright Bauer? Just won the cup.
What was that? What was that from Superbad? He's like, that was like 8 years ago. People don't forget.
People don't forget. Yeah, fair enough.
Like when you've done that, like when you've won the Stanley Cup, if there was a gif of Anthony Stewart circling whatever rink with the cup, anyone flamed you on Twitter, would you just come back with that gif?
No. If I won it yesterday, yeah. You treat me the next day after winning the cup. But if you won a cup a couple of years ago, you got to be able to take some of the heat. Because remember, Brad Marchand was on Twitter dealing with the trolls a long time ago, and he was a troll. So you got to be able to take it and receive it at the same time. Give it and receive it.
How about you? If there's a gif of you holding the cup.
No, it doesn't. It's not like permanent impunity against being made fun of.
But that's... I also did come here with a banner from a tournament I did win the next day.
That's a good point. Like about a month ago, you came in from the Hamilton tournament where your Nats won. Yeah. A little victory lap here.
Oh, that bottom a show. Central. You got a show. You can't chirp for the show. You just won a title.
All right, 11 games on the go around the NHL this evening here locally in Toronto, 7 o'clock Eastern. Watch it on Sportsnet Ontario. It is the Toronto Maple Leafs and the New Jersey Devils. A couple of things. David Amber on leadoff today talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs defense, sans Morgan Riley. Here's the A.
No, this could be a major problem. I mean, the left side of that D-line now could be Dermott, Marinson, Sandin, and that's asking a lot to hold those minutes. I mean, Riley was having an off year. He's obviously had some other nagging injuries, which we've talked about at length. But still, he was playing 24 and a bit minutes a game. You know, by far the Leafs' top defenseman, near the top in the league, really. I mean, he was 14th in ice time. And, you know, and he's also the leading defenseman scoring-wise. And I know he hadn't scored a goal since October, and he's, you know, far cry from the 20 goals he scored last year. But he carried a large, you know, amount of the load defensively for this Leafs team. So, you know, I guess they're hoping Sandin can be the sort of lightning in a bottle. You know, there's a lot of fanfare. He was the top defenseman at the World Juniors. He's an offensively gifted, smooth skating, puck moving defenseman. So he checks off all the boxes, but you're asking a guy who's unproven at this level to step in. And it's not like he's going to eat the 24 minutes, but he's going to have some of the burden of those 24 minutes that are gone. We're asking for Travis Dermott, who, you know, I would say even by his own accounts, has maybe underperformed this season compared to what the expectations were. And you know, Martin Marinson, who I think we know what he is at this point. He's a serviceable defenseman, but he's not going to carry top minutes against the other team's top players. So it's a massive question mark.
Okay, so that was David Amber this morning on leadoff. Talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs left side without Morgan Riley. So as he points out, Travis Dermott, Martin Marinch, and Rasmus Sandin, that's your left side. All of this under the umbrella of the Toronto Maple Leafs coming off an awful loss Sunday on Rogers Hometown Hockey against the Florida Panthers. Stewie, what do you look for tonight out of this Maple Leafs team facing off against the New Jersey Devils, who just, I don't know,
beat some top teams.
Took Tampa and Washington to the woodshed.
Well, you alluded to it earlier when you said, you know, the forwards now are going to have to bear down defensively because they don't have, you know, the horses on the back end. And, you know, I sort of like that idea now when, you know, if you're deficient on the left side, you got to keep it simple. And I think that's the problem with the Maple Leafs. When they get into trouble, they're holding on to the puck too long. They're trying to make the fancy play. They're trying to make the home run pass. So I think now when you have Sandin and Marinson and Dermott, who aren't the most offensively gifted at the NHL level, they got to keep it simple. And I think when this team keeps it a little bit simple, they just worry about getting the puck up, getting it across the blue line, making a good first pass. Now you let your top guys go to work down low. So I don't think, obviously it's a big blow, but I think this team needs a little bit more, you know, simplicity in their game.
I do wonder if it'll change the way that Sheldon Keefe coaches this team and wants them to play. Because, you know, we heard so much when he came in was about possession and, you know, instead of dumping it, regroup. And we're going to regroup on changes instead of dumping it in, getting guys off the ice. That's all contingent on the fact that you have guys back there like Morgan Riley to be patient and make a play with it when guys come out and buy time. That's contingent on the fact that you have, you know, Jake Muzzin and Barry and guys like that. When all of a sudden you're running it back to Martin Marinchin, it's like maybe just put that one in the O-zone. Should we maybe just chip that one in? So you wonder if this won't alter how they want to play a little bit. I'm also, a part of me is having this thought, like, they called up Timothy Liljegren too, and yeah. I know they think he's been better and he's taken strides defensively, and They're curious about what he can do. He's played with Rasmus Sandin a lot in the minors, and they've played big minutes against top guys. I wonder if they don't think that maybe there's some comfort level there for Sandin if they want to see if those guys can take some minutes together. We've got to figure out something here.
Wow, Sandin and Liljegren.
Too much? It's probably too much.
I don't know. Like,
so 2022?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you're right.
Here's what I'm curious about from a game within a game point of view. And you would have been part of discussions like this as you game plans when you did video for the Marlies and sat there with Sheldon Keefe. As you game plan for the team you're playing against, you have a look at what the opposing team's roster is. And if you're Alain Nezradin and you're game planning for tonight, does every entry, we'll watch for this tonight, does every entry by the New Jersey Devils go down the left side?
I don't know, man, because the other side is no good, not very good either.
It's like, go down
like
the middle.
Tyson Berry, Hall, CeCe, like, is there, I mean, Justin Hall's pretty good there, but.
No, but if I'm, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, they don't defend their blue line very well.
Yeah, and I think if, you know, I'm more worried about now the Calgary and the Nashvilles and the Dallases that are coming up down, you know, the next couple games here where they can really expose your defense because they have superstar players that are offensively, not just North-South players, that East-West. You know, I'm worried about Tyler Seguin or, you know, Jamie Benn turning down the wall and, you know, you got Sandin coming out of the minors trying to protect the puck and trying to get the puck out against those guys.
What do you do against elite players?
You can't. So I think they just got to worry about getting, you know, puck retrieval pretty quickly and getting that puck to the forwards. But are you really going to go run and gun with Nashville and Dallas and Calgary in a couple days?
I think
not
they're going to say,
you know, bypass New Jersey, right? But
I think they're going to say that as long as we have the puck, we're not defending. So, you know, let's maybe play so much down there that we don't have to think about it and cycle the puck. And
I want to know the numbers. We're going to go back to analytics. What is the puck possession numbers from the top team to the bottom team? How many, it's not minutes, it's seconds, right?
The difference between like possession time in the games that you're asking. Yeah. It's not much, man. Like you still have to defend. Even if you're an amazing offensive team, you're defending 45% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's impossible to avoid entirely. So I guess the goal is just to minimize how much time you're on your heels. I know.
It's like a bikini,
thing.
I know.
This is this whole thing is just exactly like a bikini, isn't it?
Stewie gets one great tweet, and you hear about it until the end of the season. Also tonight, the Winnipeg Jets take on the Vancouver Canucks, and Nashville Predators face off against the Edmonton Oilers. And during the intermissions, you can see the lovely visage of Justin Bourne. Winnipeg-Vancouver, what do you look for in this game specifically?
I'm trying to see where the Jets are at. The Canucks are on a nice run here. I'm starting to have to wonder, like, can the Canucks win the Pacific? Do we think
anybody can win the Pacific?
Yeah.
We thought Vegas was going to take the ball and run away and go hide. No, not so fast. Calgary pops up there. Arizona hangs around there. Edmonton Oilers in the conversation. Vancouver Canucks in there as well. Stay healthy. Have a great run. Keep Markstrom hot.
Yeah, it's
Why
possible.
Not?
And so now I'm looking at, you know, the Jets are 3-5-2 in their last 10 games. They lost two games in a row. The question marks, and I've written about this, is like that defense that we thought was going to be terrible at the start of the year is starting to look, well, not very good.
It's only so long you can, to me, that whole team comes down to saves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're not getting,
Connor Hellebuck's 2-2-1 in his last five and three goals against, .887 save percentage. And
that's
almost like Montreal. It's dependent on how well he plays. And, you know, he's playing a lot of games as of late. Could he be running out of gas, right? So that with, you know, defense that are tasked with, you know, overachieving as it is, I'm a little bit worried about Winnipeg. But with Vancouver now, they have the ability now to sort of distance themselves and get some traction and put 5-6 games together here and, you know, be near the top or not just near, but at the top of that Pacific division. So it's a bit of a dogfight there. And I think Vancouver now, if they put some games together, they'll be good to go.
Edmonton Oilers and Nashville Predators is an interesting one for me. Now, Nashville coming off the big win, 1-0. but the Edmonton Oilers, I wonder how much this Cassian Tkachuk situation from Saturday rallies this team or brings a team together. As a coach, you're always looking for moments where the team comes together. Teams always play best when they have an issue. Teams can play great when the issue is an issue of defiance and they can rally around something, and maybe it's as simple as they feel that they were done dirty by Tkachuk, and they're paying for it because their guy got dinged for two.
That's one thing I was hoping Stewie would elaborate on, is exactly what you're talking about. Those, like, galvanizing moments when you've been in, like, a brawl with your team and everyone comes in the dressing room after a,
that was,
you know,
awesome,
oh,
boys.
Just like, it, you know.
You know, what one of the best examples of that is? Of the past, you know, 10 years around the NHL. The year that Boston won the Stanley Cup, there was a game. I think Paille might have got suspended in it for hitting Ray Sawada, a headshot near the crease. But there was a game. It was Dallas and Boston, two teams that don't meet very often. And Boston had been scuffling.
Four fights in the first, like, minute or two.
And after that, attach a rocket to the Boston Bruins. And all those guys in that room, to a man, said it was that game and those fights and come together and all of it. Listen, I know Tim Thomas was unconscious. I fully understand that. I know that when Chara and Bergeron were on the ice, the possession numbers were out of this world. All those guys in that room, from Ferentz to the suspended Paille to the captain Zdeno Chara, who, by the way, just played game number 1,000 as a captain of a single team, which has never been done before. They always talk about how it was that game and those fights that brought them together. I wonder if that can be this for the Edmonton Oilers. Stewie?
I thought you were going to say when Clarkson jumped over the boards to fight John Scott. But and that sort of went had the opposite
effect. The opposite
effect.
Way so, is preseason game
again,
there.
Back then, that's how it used to be. But now...
But back then wasn't that long ago.
The one thing
ago.
With this whole Edmonton-Calgary situation, I think the league's going to step in and say, hey, you know what? We're trending away from this. How many times down the highlights, you know, they don't show the fights in the highlights. You actually have to actually watch the game live or check. A detailed check of the box score to see if there's fighting, right? So,
can that
you've
do
never
that
been
for
on
Edmonton?
A team though, where
I've been
you...
on a team. Oh yeah, we had a brawl against when I was with Atlanta with Boston. We had the brawl, you know, the biggest brawl of all time, and that rallied us pretty good. We ended up not making the playoffs that year, but we had a good little run after.
But that's Southeast. Like, I remember Atlanta and Washington. You guys had rough games.
Oh yeah, for sure. I saw the best fight of all time. It was Eric Bolton versus John Erskine. And when I say toe-to-toe, I was like, if anyone asked me to fight after this, I got a headache just watching this fight. It was they went toe-to-toe for a good, like, minute.
Erskine never got the credit he deserved for being a tough guy in the NHL.
And that's what people don't forget.
Legit.
People, that was a pretty tough era, that 2000 era, where that Southeast division, I was like, and I was on the fourth line, and I think that cost me my career because I'm like, I'm not fighting any of these guys. I'm not fighting Erskine, not fighting Andre Roy. Give me, I'll fight Steve Bajan or Brent Sutherby. I'm not fighting any of these guys. None. Goddard in Pittsburgh.
but you hear now, to bring it back to Edmonton, and tonight they'll face off against Nashville, so we'll see. It's the first time we're going to see the Oilers since the nightcap game on Hockey Night in Canada on Saturday. You hear all the players jumping to Cassian's defense and providing a sympathetic ear and providing sympathetic content. James Neal is talking about how, you know, he's cool with Cassian. Connor McDavid was first on the scene. That gets overlooked here in all this. When you look at that hit right before the fight, who comes in on Tkachuk first? It's Connor McDavid. And then Cassian jumps up and goes banana sandwich and grabs him, and we all know what happened after that. Leon Draisaitl, to your point in hour one, Justin, if I'm on the ice with him in the All-Star game, I'm getting off. Yeah. Like,
do you think that's heat of the battle talk?
But I do. But I think they could have been like, you know what? He cost us the game. He, you know, he fought at a stupid time. And I think they could have said this sort of thing where they were like, we don't like that. You know, he hurt our team in that instance. But I think, you know, they kind of went through something emotional together. And you go, okay, well, when that happens, these guys are going to stick up for me and be, you know, I think that to me would form a bond. You know, in a moment where it could have pulled them apart, they could have sold them down the river there. It cost them a big game. They didn't.
Dave Tippett was talking about how this bad hit and wanting to get it out of the... Everyone, like, to a person.
Well, that just talks about, you know, how good of a teammate that Cassian is and how well-respected he is in that Edmonton locker room.
Yeah, I think so.
So we think we see a...
No, they probably lose 6-0 tonight now. But no, we did
John
see
Hines has got the Preds cooking, and that's
but like
it
Calgary
for Edmonton.
Did, you know, they weren't able to match the emotion in their first game after the Oilers game. You wonder if it's tough to get up after, you know, you're already looking at that Flames game in a couple weeks.
But the thing is, unlike Edmonton, the Flames didn't have the issue. Okay, Edmonton has the issue.
That's
Edmonton's
true.
Got the problem. Edmonton's spine has been stiffened. Edmonton feels they've been wronged. Edmonton feels like their guy shouldn't have got two games. Edmonton feels like their guy did, call it frontier justice or what, old school, like code or whatever you want to call it, did what was the right thing at that moment. Like, to me, Edmonton, like, the wind behind the sails for a team, you knew it wasn't going to be the Calgary Flames. Tkachuk went and did what he did, got ragdolled, and they ended up winning the game and moved on. Edmonton's the one with the burr under the saddle here, isn't it?
True. Yeah, no, that's a good point. And if there is some galvanizing effect, you would expect to see something. So that stuff is so nebulous. It's
the game's
so impossible
changed.
To pin down.
This is not 1996 anymore.
But emotions haven't. Like, human beings haven't. The game has, yes. But sports is what the fight between what your head knows and how your heart feels. That's where sports exists, right? Like, it's tough to intellectually justify a fight, but man, I can understand it when I just let my heart take over and let my heart talk about it. Yeah, that felt like that was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
But then you process it intellectually and you say, well, no, because of these reasons.
I know the league was a little bit surprised at how many people didn't think there should be any suspension for that just because they were mad at the Tkachuk hits. Like, that was a lot of our hearts talking, just like, that seemed like fair justice. Yeah. But, like, you know, you can't do that.
You guys see Kelly Sutherland popping in his false teeth?
No.
Before making a call?
So you slap really these in there?
Yeah. I've never seen a fish have to pop in his false teeth before making a call.
Hockey injury or
one would assume we never. Yeah. I mean, you look at, like, Tim Peel is still out from his injury, and referees are always getting injured at various times. Tim was supposed to do the All-Star game too, and he's a St. Louis guy, so that one really stings for Tim Peel. But Kelly Sutherland, there he is before making the call by the penalty box. We're talking about visuals before, and we talked about Brad Marchand, the official popping in the teeth.
Yeah. I want to make this a PSA to young kids who have yet to get their teeth knocked out.
Who have yet to, he's saying,
when you get your teeth knocked out, please go to the dentist and cement them in, please, because
I'm tired of
seeing these guys wheel around and they got no teeth in. And, you know, Wayne Simmonds is a good friend of mine, and he's the number one culprit where he looks like a crazy person because he's missing, like, his front three teeth. And I'm like, put your teeth in. And I'm seeing Danger Mathias, you know, on Instagram. He's got his bottom quarter row missing. Put your teeth in, please.
I remember one college story of one of our players on college like trips. You'd play Friday, Saturday. Yeah. Saturday night, you go out after you fly out on Sunday. Yeah. And I remember one Saturday night, a teammate getting sick in a garbage can in my hotel room, and the next day having to go back to fish out his teeth.
Oh no!
But this is why I used to. This is why I cemented mine in, because in Florida we had like four or five guys that.
How many are you missing?
My front two.
Yeah.
And guys would take them out at the bar and order someone a drink. And as they order the drink, they'd slip the false teeth in there.
Slide the drink over. Yeah. Free drink on me.
So there's actually, I think, a picture on my Instagram of me, like, wearing Brian Allen's teeth as, like, a hearing aid. Guys would put them in their ears.
It's like your IFB.
So guys would end up losing it, where they say, this is your last set of teeth. If you lose these, you're not getting them. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. How would you feel about this? So there was one of my favorite teeth stories in the NHL. This would have been Boston Bruins training camp, 57, maybe. So this is the era where, listen, everybody had their teeth knocked out, and everybody in their stall had a glass of water and their teeth in it when they went and practiced or when they played, and they came back in and popped them in, and off they go to the restaurant, the bar. What a league. So there was a Swedish player, Sven Johansson, Tumba. So Tumba Johansson was a Swedish hockey player, probably would have become the first Swedish hockey player in the NHL. I think Boston had designs to make him the first Swedish-born hockey player to ever suit up in the NHL. He didn't. He was sent home, and he believes it was because of a prank that he pulled on his teammates. So he always thought, like, oh, the guys are all joking around. They're all friends pulling pranks on each other and, shaving cream and the white towels and that all bit, Vaseline doorknobs, usual stuff, right? So before practice, oh, God, this must have been awful for these guys. Before practice, he switched all the false teeth. All around the room, took one out of one glass and put in the other glass. Yeah. The only way to figure out,
just
try them on.
Them all on after. The guys lost it on him.
Yeah, so I lose it. That's, yeah.
Would
that's
you like
cool,
that,
man.
Stewie, having to put on someone else's false teeth there?
Well, mine are
man?
Cemented into my head, so I don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, I'm crowns now, too.
All right, maybe we'll pick up the false teeth conversation with Mike Rupp, NHL Network analyst, who joins us next. I thought that would get more giggles out of you guys. You guys sort of,
that's cringy. Gross. It's cringy.
Yeah, come on. Tuesday afternoon. Have some fun. Sportsnet 590, the Fan Simulcast on Sportsnet and the NHL Network.
More Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590, the Fan.
Welcome back to the program here Monday to Friday, noon to 2 Eastern. Jeff Merrick, Anthony Stewart, and Justin Bourne. Pleased to bring on to the program. And we'll start by talking about some Metropolitan Division issues, and we'll see where we go from there. He is an analyst for the NHL Network. He is a former Stanley Cup champion. He scored his Stanley Cup winning goal with the New Jersey Devils. He is Mike Rupp, and he joins us now. Mike, thanks so much for doing this. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing well, fellas. Hopefully you guys are all doing well, and looking forward to being on with you guys. Thank you.
Well, the pleasure is all ours, and we're going to start by going off a little off the beaten track here a little bit. Before you came on, we were talking about false teeth and false teeth stories. Mike Rupp, do you have all of your own teeth? And if so, how did you manage to do that?
All right. Yeah, I do have all my teeth. Being 6'5", I think that I was maybe out of the range a little bit of some of the stuff, but I think if any player would take some hits to the mouth. I had braces as a kid, and when I got to the point where I was not wearing a cage, I remember my mother, when I was playing in the OHL, was she was all over me about wearing a mouth guard. And of course, I was a rebellious kid that thought this was rebelling and I wanted to be cool and not wear a mouth guard. I would not wear one. And then I remember once I was in the NHL, I'd be getting messages from her saying, I watched the game last night. You didn't have a mouth guard in. And you know, when I started wearing it, I was like, all right, Mom, I promise I'll wear a mouth guard. And I wore a mouth guard. And even with it, though, I mean, yep. I've taken a couple. I took a slap shot in the mouth. I remember my front four teeth on top were pushed back in my mouth. And it's crazy what would have happened. I mean, I still got my teeth, you know. I don't know what would have happened if I didn't have that. I mean, it would have been a disaster. So fortunately, I'm one of the few, I think, that was able to retain them all.
I remember talking to Trevor Linden once. This is after he retired. I think it was a couple of years after he retired. It was at Hockey Day in Canada. We were up north in Whitehorse. And I asked him, I said, what was the moment where you really sunk into you that you were retired? Because, Mike, as you all know, Anthony here beside me, you know, when you retire, it doesn't really settle in right away. I said, what was the moment of realization that, wow, I'm really retired? And he said, when I was in the dentist chair getting my teeth fixed. Because there's no point in doing it while you're playing. But now that I'm done, like, that was the moment where it really hit him that, wow, I'm really not in the NHL anymore. Do you remember any guys that you ever saw around the room and you say, guy, you got to get your teeth fixed?
yeah, I mean, you see, you know, some of the times you'd see guys that you almost, I mean, for a while there, to be honest, I used to sit there and I used to be like, I wish I would lose a tooth. Like, I want to lose just like one of the off-centered ones. I don't want to lose the front one. Maybe like one of the ones right out the off-center. I like the part. I like looking that part. And, I used to sit there and be like, I'd be okay if I lost one. But then you see some of the guys who have these injuries around their mouth, and they're sitting there 6 months later, and they're like, yeah, I was at the dentist. I had to go get another procedure done. I'm like, wait, from that thing that happened like last season? I'm like, you know, yeah. I mean, those things, there's a continuation. You got to wait and get all this stuff done. I mean, it's a hassle that, you know, you see a lot of guys going around with the half chip tooth teeth that look like Lloyd Christmas. So that was always the one that you always poke fun at. But you know how it is? And Stu, you'd probably say the same thing. When you sit there and you chirp a guy, sure as hell, you chirp a guy about getting hit in the mouth, or maybe his lip would look funny, it's all big, or he looked goofy with his Lloyd Christmas smile. Next thing you know, they're like, be careful. Next thing you know, you're getting high stuck the next game for zippers. So, yeah, it's a lot of guys, you know, you see guys nowadays, too. You guys, I mean, does Drew Doughty ever have his teeth? Like, I don't even know if he has his teeth.
In
the summertime, he's got no teeth. So I think it's fantastic, and it's a surefire hockey player for sure.
Mike, I'll start by asking you a fairly general on-ice question. I know you spend a lot of time watching games there in the Metropolitan Division. There are some good teams, and it's a tight race between the Capitals, Penguins, Islanders, Hurricanes, Flyers, Blue Jackets. Even the Rangers have some talent there. Who do you like to end up emerging out of that division?
Well, you know, to be honest, I probably before the, you know, I do work in Pittsburgh with the Penguins game coverage, and I'll tell you what, just from seeing them, all their games and up close and personal, that this team that Pittsburgh has this year, from even before Sid got hurt at the beginning of the season, there's something different about this group. It's a group that I think has more of the it factor than they did in 16 and 17 when they won. And this was a very intriguing group. So I'm not overly surprised with how they played without Crosby, with him obviously getting back in line up against the Wild tonight. But the one thing that I think really hurts them, I would have said them, is this Jake Guentzel injury. I think that's the one thing that's just going to, I don't know. I mean, this team's still going to be ultra competitive. They're going to be in games. They can put on a long run. But I'd have to probably go with the Caps. I just don't. I think that with the Washington Capitals and the Pittsburgh Penguins, there's a bit of a significant drop off, I think, from those two teams. So I think that's the cream of the crop in the Metro. But it's a tough division. I mean, when you look, and it's going to be interesting what teams are in the mix, what they do before trade deadline to kind of really assess where they're at. And this Rangers team has been a nice surprise, I thought, and the Columbus Blue Jackets as well. So what did they do? Are they a team that's going to just, okay, this is where we're at in our development here, let's just see how these guys handle it and stay pat, or do they try to do something to shake it up a little bit and give them a little bit of a spark? But those two teams for me, I would probably lean towards the Washington Capitals still, I think, being the favorite in that division.
Rupper, New Jersey's in Toronto tonight, and you spent some time there. What are your thoughts on the direction of the Devils right now? Do they, you know, sell everybody, sell all their pieces right now, or try to, you know, ride the momentum of a new coach, a new GM coming in?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. I think everybody was surprised with, you know, if you just look over the last however long, I think everybody thought Taylor Hall was going to be moved at some point. You obviously know that the coaching change in John Hines, and now the big shock was Ray Shiro. I'm a big Ray Shiro fan. I think he's one of the best in the business. I think this is a team now. Ray did everything he could to put pieces in place and really give a makeover to this roster over the last number of years. When he took over this team, it was a very – the cupboards were completely empty. There wasn't much in there. And I thought he's done a really good job of setting this team up. I just think that this ownership group that they have is the – you know, the same ownership with the Philadelphia Sixers. They're more the numbers game type. That's what they're interested in. So this didn't work going and trying to do the quick overhaul real quick. I think this is going to be a team that's very calculated in what they do moving forward. A little bit of the money ball type analytics are going to really take over here. It'll be interesting to see what they do. I think that it's going to be a team. They're playing well. They're playing a good brand of hockey right now. But I think that the long-term plan is just for them to they're not going to do anything, I think, that's going to be opening a bunch of people's eyes. I think they're just going to be kind of staying the course, and they're going to see where things are at the end of the season. I think they're going to be moving guys out. I just think that they're going to look at all the underlying numbers, and that's a lot of where their decisions are going to be derived from.
Mike Rupp joins us, analyst for the NHL Network. You can watch him all season long on NHL Tonight. So I want to get back to the Pittsburgh Penguins conversation here quickly. And Sidney Crosby returns tonight as the Penguins face off against the Minnesota Wild, one of 11 games on the board around the league. 18-6-4 without Sidney Crosby, outside of all the other injuries, just without Sidney Crosby in the lineup. Mike, 18-6-4, how is that possible? How did they do that?
It's been incredible. I mean, they have it's kind of been the perfect storm for this team, because we know from last season, and we know how motivated Evgeny Malkin was in the off season, and being a teammate with him when he's saying things, they're just not words spoken. There's going to be actions taken, and he's taken action in his game this year. He's been fantastic. They obviously started the season without him, and you didn't know how that was going to affect him, and he's been unbelievable. His numbers over that time sit out are ridiculous. But it's not just that. It's not just riding on Evgeny's shoulders. The players that they have stepping up, it's incredible. I mean, Brian Rust, to me, he's a guy, yep. Here's a player that I'd like to hear him get up in the Selke talk here, because he gets all those difficult matchups. And we were running the NHL Network with research, some really cool stats the other day. A little comprehensive, but of all the players in the league that average a minute of power play time and a minute of PK time and are more than a point a game. So basically an all-around player that's in every situation that's averaging more than a point a game. His numbers that he's up there with, or the guys he's up there with, are the likes of Patrice Bergeron. He's up there with, you know, the Sasha Barkovs. Brad Marchand, they're household names. And it kind of looks funny because there's Brian Rust, but that's how important, how big he's been for this team. He's been a huge lift for them. But then they've got some really nice pieces in the works. This line that they've had over the last number of weeks with Zach Aston-Reese, Teddy Bluger, and Brandon Tanev has just been outstanding. And sort of to the same lines of, we always used to talk about the Islanders' fourth line and how they contribute, and they almost kind of fall into, at one time, almost like a second line for the Islanders. That's what this line's doing. They're creating, they have an identity, they're buzzing all over the ice. They have so many interchangeable pieces on this team. They got Dominic Simone, who can play center ice. Nick Bjugstad, who's been out of the lineup center ice. Jared McCann can play the middle. They have Cahoon, who's been really nice. They have just all these interchangeable pieces that when things seem to dry up, they just, you know, it's kind of plug and play. And they've been getting fantastic goaltending by Tristan Jarry. So it's incredible. And one of the best finds I've seen in the NHL over the last calendar year, I think, has been on defense, John Marino. This guy's an absolute stud. And the fact that they're able to pluck him out of Edmonton there, it's incredible. And that team, they just have it. I hate the cliche, everyone's pulling the rope, but every single night it's somebody else stepping up, and they're coached really well.
You can probably throw Marcus Pettersson, Mike, into that conversation as well. And I think we're all waiting for that desk drawer in Jim Rutherford's office to open for the real Pettersson contract, because he did this team a major favor in the offseason.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when you look at the stuff that Jim Rutherford's done with this team, let's even look at it just from a standpoint before we even get to Pettersson. You've got Tristan Jarry. The Penguins were a team that needed a complete facelift. They needed a complete different feel. They kind of lost their identity last year. And so a lot of moves were made, and they were given guys either second chance to kind of rewrite their career, mm-hmm. or the first chance and given guys which are motivated players with speed and youth and new blood in the system. Those things have added up really nice. But when you can just think about the Tristan Jarry, this is a really interesting thing, because at the beginning of the year, this Pens team was not cap compliant. So I believe the difference between Jarry and Casey DeSmith was about $200,000. And that $200,000 is what was going to allow this Penguins team to be compliant or not. And so they do a little flip-flop there, because Tristan Jarry he'd have to go on waivers and probably would not clear, so they keep Tristan Jarry, and he's been fantastic. So they basically, through this process, have, between Tristan Jarry, they've found this number one goaltender, this huge asset, and now they've got John Marino, who they get from Edmonton, I think, for a fifth or a sixth round pick, yep. Who this guy is going to be, if not already, he's not on this roster when they're healthy, but he is the top pair defenseman. Now all of a sudden you're looking at this team, and man, they got a lot of money coming off the books potentially this summer. I mean, Jim Rutherford's done a heck of a job. Marcus Pettersson, who they added last season, was he is a guy that he can play in any situation. He's a second PP guy. He's got a great stick on puck. He's got a long rangy frame. they've really transformed a lot of things. Where I think actually moving forward, there's certain guys on the team that have kind of become expendable moving forward, which frees up cap space for this team to really, they can make a mark. They can go after a big fish in free agency this summer. So they've transformed their team. A lot of it was due to guys that it just have that, they have that extra little, I don't know, everybody with this way the season went with some of the players last year. I mean, you could talk Patrick Hornquist. There was always talk of when is this guy's contract going to turn bad for this team? Because he's kind of on a pricey deal for the miles that are on him. He's been outstanding when he's been in the lineup. He's been hurt a lot, but you know, Evgeny Malkin's been motivated. You know, Dominic Cahoon was on the second line in Chicago at times, now getting another opportunity to play with some top-end talent. Brandon Tanev was never able to get the amount of minutes he probably deserved in Winnipeg. He's getting them now. Teddy Bluger is just an all-around hockey player. Yep. Just to evaluate him, he just does everything out there. I mean, there's so many pieces in place. Jim Rutherford's done an unbelievable job of kind of cultivating this and transforming this team.
And even after all these years with Rutherford in Pittsburgh, and this is the most impressive thing to me, Rutherford says the same thing. We have Crosby, we have Malkin, we're going for it. And every year this team is competitive. Mike, it's always a delight catching up with you. Best of luck going forward, and we'll catch up real soon.
Anytime, fellas. Have a good one.
There he is, Mike Rupp, analyst for the NHL Network. You can watch him all season long on NHL Tonight, and he joins us here on Hockey Central on a frequent basis. We step away. We come back with our producer, Maddie Marchese. Maddie has questions. I'm sure these will be razor blade intelligence. So put on your thinking toques, Anthony Stewart and Justin Bourne. And Maddie has questions next. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. This is Hockey Central, back on Sportsnet and the NHL Network in moments.
More Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hey, Rachel, big praise to John Marino from Mike Rupp.
You know, the Pittsburgh Penguins have not, you know, we always think of their goal scoring. Only two teams in the league have given up fewer goals than the Penguins. The Pittsburgh ones.
That's right, yeah.
That's goaltending.
Who's the number one goalie?
No one knows.
That's Tristan Jarry.
It's Casey DeSmith.
Matty Marchese's here. Go ahead, Stewie.
Nope, no comment.
Nothing.
Clean. Nice shirt. Pass the test.
All right.
Guy thinks I went and bought a new shirt for this.
Yeah, got a stylus.
Yeah, I wish.
What are the two creases down the front? You just take that out of the package?
You still got pins in it and the cardboard around the neck. All right. In Major League Baseball, the Houston Astros were punished heavily for cheating. And I was trying to think about this. Is there really a way to even cheat in hockey? Or have you heard of teams that have, or instances where teams have tried to cheat in hockey? So he's got a grin on his face.
This may be hasn't been confirmed, but in minor hockey, I've heard that teams have dressed players in different players' jerseys that have been either suspended or older or younger. So neither confirmed nor denied.
I had that actually when we were younger too. We were six. And
I'm pretty sure that I played against Ovechkin and Kovalchuk in the Quebec Pee Wee tournament. Don't ask me how.
They pulled it off.
There's always minor hockey birth certificate issues, junior hockey with certain hockey players from a certain part of the globe with birth certificate. But NHL, I mean, there was always Scotty Bowman's trick, paint the visitor's dressing room before they come in. So they sit there and paint fumes. And,
I'm thinking
we're so excited to have you in here. We painted the room for you.
I'm thinking of goaltending when it was huge. Was it Ranford or what, someone wearing a huge jersey and tying a string from their catching mitt to their hip within their jersey. It's so like when your web. Hand goes up, it's like a wing.
Tony Esposito, I think Tony Esposito used to do that when he played Blackhawks because he was one of the first to go down butterfly style and he would have it between his pants.
Yeah.
So keep the legs open.
Goalies are the worst cheaters.
Yeah.
But nothing that egregious, though. Like, that was an elaborate scheme that they had in Houston and in maybe in Boston. Yeah.
I've heard of teams that maybe have put sand
as
they
walk
out to dull the blades. That's probably the best one.
But just like doing pre-scout work, I know that, like, you know what the other team's doing. Like, in baseball, knowing a fastball or a curveball is coming is a huge advantage. I can tell you they're going to forecheck in a 2-on-2. It's just a matter of can you beat it. So it's not as easy systems-wise or knowledge-wise in hockey.
I had a coach growing up that used to put pennies in front of the other team's door when they were coming onto the ice from the bench.
That's the adult of your team.
That's okay. You ain't cheating, you ain't trying.
Roger Nelson was always the king of trying to find the find the way to do it, right?
I don't hate if you're not cheating,
but I kind of subscribe to
in
that.
In the KHL, we scored with 3 seconds to go one time, and they said the buzzer went.
No, it didn't. They're like,
the puck went to the net, we look up, and then we watch it go 2-1-0. Oh, no goal. The buzzer went.
Yeah. Okay.
Like,
okay,
what it'd be like, I think Roger Nelson would, if he always uses timeout, if he wanted to use another timeout, he'd always have a couple of students in the stands behind the Peterborough bench. And you give them the nod, and a couple eggs would hit the ice.
Clean it up.
All of a sudden, you buy yourself another timeout, but not like to the sophistication of what we just saw from the Houston Astros. I don't know that I have a problem with, to be honest with you.
There's cheating in everything. Look at the New England Patriots. They're the biggest cheaters going.
Oh, man. What did you just do to your mentions?
Whatever. I'm not popular enough for that. Don't worry. Chicago has two goalies who are UFAs. Could we see something crazy like them moving both of them?
No. I think there's a contract for one in Stan Bowman's drawer.
And which one?
I don't know. I keep going back and forth. Elliot and I have had this discussion before on the podcast.
31 Thoughts. 31 Check it thoughts. Out. Thursday, sorry.
Apple Podcasts. Thursday mornings. And he's of the belief that it might be a Leonard.
Oh, yeah?
But who knows?
Yeah. I mean...
They're both on expiring deals.
It's really hard to part ways with a guy who won a cup for you. I know teams struggle with that, but there is a level of ruthlessness that is required in pro sports today. So,
we've got Chicago and Montreal on nationally tomorrow night. You've seen Crawford's numbers in Montreal. They are spectacular.
Isn't that home for him?
Yeah.
So what are you saying? You're saying he's going to Montreal?
Yeah, that's what I heard. Yeah, Corey Crawford to Montreal. You heard it here first.
Carey Price going to Chicago.
Yeah, start it now.
Okay, there's a rumor that a new skills event at the All-Star Game will be players shooting the puck from the stands and trying to hit targets on the ice.
Love it.
Firstly, how good would Stewie be at that, considering he can put it over the scoreboard?
Well, I heard that Stewie flips,
you shoot over the fans' head.
Yeah,
so coming from a guy that's hit a fan in the head, I don't recommend they do that. Please don't.
So the plan is that they're going to take the netting, allegedly, and then put it over the top as it goes up to where the players are shooting from. This is supposed to be the last event of the skills competition. Do we like this?
I'm going to hand this one over to Justin. I would have to see it first.
This is like my dream combination of golf and hockey.
Yeah,
I'm constantly walking around a concourse being like, I could probably sauce it over that. You know, I think it's going to be interesting. But the only thing is, when they've had good ideas, it hasn't been interesting in the past. The passing event has been not fun.
I think they should do like the home run derby where you're on the ice, you got to shoot it over the mesh, and all the fans got gloves. And if you catch it, you win a prize.
Stewie's
just trying to figure out a way he can get to the All-Star game.
I used to have the home run thing when I was coaching midget players, and it was you had to shoot the puck to the other end. If you got it over the glass, which NHL players could do, then it's a home run. If you don't, you have to skate around the whole ice. Every player on the opposing team has to pass it to each other before they can shoot on the goalie and score.
Who beats who?
Problem is, in the NHL, everybody's putting it over the glass.
Yeah. Everyone's sizzling that one over. You have one for 5 seconds? Have a yes or no?
No way.
True or false?
That's too
Edmonton.
Nothing? True or false, the show's over.
Writer's Block is next. Thanks for tuning in.